shall we carry on here? So I was intending to finish this sutta. We're just having a look at the last remaining defilements of the mind to be overcome, and then come to the very end of the whole path as a consequence. So let's carry on with these defilements. We just had a look at the idea of discomfort just now, and it also kind of also reminds us of the importance of being comfortable in meditation practice. Yeah, how important it is to set yourself up in a way where you can be at ease and you can really relax. And so this is because these things become obstacles for the meditation. So once you decide that you're going to overcome all of these things, then while meditating, excessive energy arose in me, and because of that, my immersion, my samadhi, fell away. When the immersion falls away, the light and vision of forms vanish. So excessive energy, and this is when you are basically trying too hard. Usually, it's usually what this is referring to. So the mind is kind of still working a little bit too much, and it is a kind of restlessness, really. It comes under the idea of restlessness. And what you have to do in these kind of situations is you have to learn to be more passive, just to sit back, just to enjoy the powerful experiences and not do anything about it and be passive. And most of us can relate to this. This is not just for deep meditation experiences, but this problem also is very common for everyone, really. Yeah, you're doing too much in your meditation. You don't have the ability to just sit back and enjoy. So the idea of learning just to sit back, yeah, the idea of resting after a long day's work and all of these kind of ideas, they help us with the idea of just being aware, being passive. Being a passenger on the train is a really nice way of thinking about it. If you're sitting on the train, you're looking out the window, you're not shouting to the driver what to do, you're just sitting there watching passively. Whatever happens outside of the window, you take it in, but you have no choice in what you are experiencing. Yeah, the whatever is there, whatever is outside the window, you just have to accept that as it is. In the same way, you learn this idea of passivity in meditation practice, not doing it, but enjoying it. And this kind of reduces the excessive energy as you do that. Suppose a person was to grip a quail too tightly in their hands. It would die right there. So you are killing off your meditation if you grip it too hard. You don't want to grip your meditation with your mind. You want to allow that quail, that mind, to kind of develop on by itself without you trying to make it happen, so to speak. I'll make sure that neither doubt, nor loss of focus, nor dullness and drowsiness, nor fear, nor excitement, nor discomfort, nor excessive energy will arise in me again. Then while meditating, overly lax energy arose in me, and because of that, my immersion fell away. So, in meditation practice, we need to have energy, we need to have the energy of the mind, and even if you don't do very much, the mind needs to be energized. And if the lack of energy in the mind is very similar to the idea of dullness and drowsiness. And so what you do when you have lacks in energy, you try to bring up an inspiring contemplation in the mind. And I've been talking about this a little bit, not too much, but the idea of being inspired is the idea of feeling interested, of feeling that this is really worthwhile. And a very important part of inspiration, and the Buddha talks about inspiration in a number of ways. One of the words in Pali that can be translated as inspiration is Veda. Veda means, on the one hand, to know something, on the other hand, to feel and experience something. And inspiration is very similar, because when you are inspired, you understand, you know, wow, this is really good stuff. You know it's good, and you also feel a sense of emotional pull at the same time. Inspiration is also emotion at the same time. Very similar to the idea of Veda in the suttas. And that Veda arises, can arise by contemplating the Dhamma, feeling inspired by a Dhamma discourse. It can be because of the contemplating the Sangha. The Sangha means the noble, the Aryans, the noble ones, feeling inspired by someone who you feel really has the act together. Yeah, wherever that might be. It can be inspired by the Buddha, yeah, of course, even though the Buddha is a bit distant, but inspiration in the Buddha is also part of that. But also things like understanding your sila. Sila nusati, recollection of your conduct, actually is an important part of this. Recollection of your generosity is an important part of this. Sometimes you just think about your life. Yeah, and in meditation, you have to be very gentle with yourself when you do these kind of things. You don't want to do a lot of heavy thinking which destroys the peace and calm that you have. What you do is, what I usually like to say, you nudge the mind in a certain direction. Yeah, very gently you remind yourself of something you have done. A beautiful act of kindness, an act of generosity, when you really felt something in the past. You felt uplifted by your own conduct. And that very uplift that you felt at that time, you bring it into the present. And when you bring it into the present, you regain some of that emotional experience that you had at some point in the past. Energy comes back. The mind feels inspired. You bring that energy in with the breath or whatever it is that you're doing, and the whole experience becomes much more interesting and powerful as a consequence. Yeah, energy, bringing energy into the meditation practice. When immersion falls away, the light and vision of forms vanish. Suppose a person was to grip a quail too loosely, it would fly out of their hands. So you need a bit of that energy, a little bit of holding on. So a little bit of effort seems to be implied here as well, in fact. I'll make sure that neither doubt, nor loss of focus, nor dullness and drowsiness, nor fear, nor excitement, nor discomfort, nor excessive energy, nor overly lax energy will arise in me again. While meditating, longing arose in me. Yeah, longing, abhijapa, not entirely sure what that word means, a very rare word in the suttas, so maybe longing is right. I think it's just an alternative word for desire, really. So here you have the first of the five hindrances. We have seen pretty much all the other ones, but here's the first one, and it is something to do with desire. And desire can, of course, have the form of longing. Yeah, you long for something. You long for whatever it is. There's something missing in your life, and you feel that you have that longing for that thing that is missing. Yeah. And this can, of course, arise in anyone at any time. It's just a form of desire, really, a form of attachment that you have. So maybe you have a memory of your someone very dear to you who has passed away, and then the longing to be with that person, for example, arises in you. Yeah, longing is often related to people. You long for someone who has passed away, whoever that might be. And so that is destructive for the meditation practice. And so then you focus on the joy and happiness that you are requiring in your meditation, and you realize that that longing probably is misplaced. I'll make sure that none of these things arise in my mind, yeah? But while meditating, perception of diversity arose in me. Yeah? So the point of samadhi is to unify the mind, to have a simple object, one light in the mind, one form in the mind, one thing that you focus on. And the more you're focused in on a single object, the more unified the mind is, and the more samadhi you have as a consequence. But sometimes the perception that you have can be a perception of maybe you have many lights coming at one go, yeah? Many lights is not so good. One light is far better. So perception of diversity would be then many things happening in the mind. And remember, sometimes you hear people saying that even in a jhana state you can have like sense experience, like sounds or whatever. But if you have sense experience in the jhana state, sense experience by definition is diversity. When you're seeing right now, you're seeing enormous amount of things at the same time. That's called diversity. When you hear, the sound is always changing. That's called diversity. So here we are doing the opposite of diversity. We're unifying the mind. So this shows that even here you want to avoid the perception of the senses, even at this point. And this is prior to the jhanas already. This is before the jhanas, right? We're talking about now. And so diversity is a problem if we want to unify the mind properly. So you go back to a single object and you make that the main attention. That's why we start with the breath. The breath then turns into the turned into the light and the form, and then we carry on from there. Yeah. So you make sure that none of these things happening. Yeah. And while meditating, heedful, keen, and diligent, I perceive both lights and visions of form. But before long, my light and vision of forms vanished. It occurred to me, what's the cause? What's the reason why my light and vision of forms vanish? It occurred to me, excessive concentration on forms arose in me. And because of that, my immersion fell away. When immersion falls away, the light and vision of forms fall away. Excessive concentration on forms. I'm not entirely sure what this means, but the Pali here, Atti Nijayitattang, is somehow related to the idea of like staring or kind of excessive looking almost. And maybe you are again trying too hard to kind of look at the form or look at what's going on, and the kind of the staring too much or whatever, however you want to call it. Maybe putting in a little bit too much effort perhaps. Maybe just focusing on the form rather than the light. And the form is something that you have to give up eventually, because the form will be transformed when you enter a deep samadhi state. So you have to leave the form behind to some extent down the track and just enter into a pure kind of formless jhana state. So not entirely sure what that means, but the idea I think is that the rupa has to go at some point and you kind of leave that behind. Anyway, so there you are. There's a long list of upakilesas for you. And some of those are going to be relevant for you right now, because they are true for anyone who tries to follow the breath or do any kind of meditation. Some of these things will be far more relevant down the track when you come to this particular samadhi. So it is all there for you to reflect on. But coming back to the basic idea of upakilesa, the five hindrances is essentially what we are looking at. That's the main thing. So you can focus on the five hindrances as the main idea or the main focus for understanding what these defilements are about. Okay, so let's look fairly quickly at the rest of the sutta. I'm not going to go into great detail now because it's getting late and we don't need to look at these things in great detail, because they are very profound things, but they are interesting nevertheless. I'll make sure that neither doubt, nor loss of focus, nor dullness and drowsiness, nor terror, nor excitement, nor discomfort, nor excessive energy, nor over-relaxed energy, nor longing, nor perception of diversity, nor excessive concentration on forms will arise in me. When I understood that doubt is a corruption of the mind, this is the upakilesa, I gave it up. So this is kind of the thing here. The thing is to have that insight into the nature of the mind, to understand the corruptions of the mind. And this is what we do. This is a very important part of the Satipatthana practice. If you remember the Satipatthana Sutta at the very end, it's all about contemplation of the five hindrances. It's part of the last part of Satipatthana called Dhammanupassana, contemplation of mental qualities or contemplation of principles. Is actually understanding the five hindrances. And this is exactly what we're seeing here. But here we're seeing it from the viewpoint of this large number of upakilesas instead, refined defilements of the mind. But it's the same idea. You want to investigate these things. You want to understand that they are problematic. And when you see that they are problematic, then you use your practice to overcome these things and you leave them behind. And this is what the Buddha to be is doing here. It's a similar thing for any kind of meditator, really. When I understood that loss of focus, dullness and drowsiness, fear, excitement, discomfort, excessive energy, overly lax energy, longing, perception of diversity, and excessive concentration on forms are corruptions of the mind, I gave them up. While meditating, heedful, keen, and diligent, I perceived light, but I did not see forms. I saw forms, but did not see light. And this went on for a whole night, a whole day, even a whole night and day. I thought, what is the cause? What is the reason for this? It occurred to me, when I don't focus on the basis or foundation of the forms, but focus on the foundation of the light, then I perceive light and do not see forms. But when I don't focus on the foundation for light, but focus on the foundation of the forms, then I see forms and do not perceive light. And this goes on for a whole night and a whole day, even a whole night and day. So the Buddha-to-be is basically looking at various qualities of the meditation. Yeah, sometimes the form may fall away and all that is left is a brightness in the mind. And that is probably not the best way to go forward because it's more difficult to focus on. Ideally, you want both the form and the light. If you have just the form but not the light, then you are missing some of the energy that is required in the meditation. You want these things to come together. That's why I think he is looking into what these things actually mean, so we can get the right balance in the mind, the energy, the ability to focus on all of these things. It goes on for a whole night, a whole day, even a whole night and day. So it carries on for a long time, but ultimately the idea, you want to go beyond this, not just staying with this, but you want to go even further. While meditating diligent or heedful, keen and diligent, I perceive limited light and so limited forms. I perceive limitless light and limitless forms. And this went on for a whole night and a whole day, even a whole night and day. I thought, what is the cause? What is the reason for this? It occurred to me, when my samadhi, my immersion is limited, then my vision is limited. And with limited vision, I perceive limited light and see limited forms. But when my immersion samadhi is limitless, then my vision is limitless. And my limitless vision, I perceive limitless light and limitless forms. So again, the Buddha-to-be is looking to purify the samadhi. He wants things to be limitless. Yeah, he wants to understand the whole process of these things. And so he is moving towards the limitless visions here. And this goes on for a whole night and a whole day, even a whole night and day. After understanding that doubt, loss of focus, dullness and drowsiness, fear, excitement, discomfort, excessive energy, over-relaxed energy, longing, perception of diversity, and excessive concentration on forms are corruptions of the mind, I had given them up. I thought, I've given up my mental corruptions. Now let me develop samadhi in three ways. I developed samadhi while placing the mind and keeping it connected. Without placing the mind, but just keeping it connected. Without placing the mind or keeping it connected. With rapture, without rapture, with pleasure, and with equanimity. I'm not sure about the three ways. There seems to be more than three ways there, but anyway. Now the Buddha-to-be, what he's doing now, he has kind of purified, he has understood all the lower aspects of samadhi. He has contemplated the limitless samadhi, the limited samadhi, the various corruptions of the mind, abandoned all of that. And now he wants to go beyond all of this, yeah? Remember, he had this recollection when he was a child, the recollection of the first jhana experience, while his father was working in the fields. He had this automatic experience, and now this is where he wants to go. He wants to experience the full immersion of the mind, the full samadhi of the mind. And here we have a slightly different way of classifying samadhi. Usually the jhanas are classified as fourfold, but this is actually a fivefold classification of the jhanas. Yeah, it's called threefold, but it's really a fivefold classification. And the first jhana is divided into two subcategories, or there is one kind of intermediate category between the first and the second jhana. And this is why this looks slightly different from the usual ideas. So you develop immersion while placing the mind and keeping it connected, and placing the mind and keeping it connected is our translations for vitakka and vichara, which usually are rendered as thought, but because we are talking about the deep stillness of the mind, these have a different meaning when it comes to the jhana states, and they are just a very gentle kind of movement of the mind that we're looking at here. And it's already gone beyond your ability to will anything. This is an automatic process happening in the mind itself. And this is the hallmark of the first jhana, that it has this wobble, as Ajahn Brahm calls it. This is the wobble of the first jhana. In the second jhana, you have there is no vitakka anymore. It's avitakka, without placing the mind, and merely keeping it connected, which is vichara here. It's just a slight holding on to the object, but basically that is all that is left. And then you come to the second jhana, which is atakka, avitakka, avichara down here. And this is where all vitakka and vichara is left behind, and you actually attain the full samadhi for the first time. Full samadhi means complete unity of the mind, where the mind is completely immersed in itself. There's no movement, there's nothing happening, it's complete stillness. The first time in your life that you have experienced anything like this. Then you have samadhi that is sapitakang, where there is a rapture, and then you have samadhi without rapture, where all there is bliss. And then you have samadhi which is sata sahagatang. This is another word for sukha. There's the bliss in the mind. And then you have the last one, which is the upeka sahagatang samadhi here. So these are just different ways of talking about the jhana states that are found in this particular sutta. And the very last one here, the upeka sahagatang, this is the fourth jhana, where you have the pure equanimity that is left behind. Sata sahagatang is the third jhana, where you have happiness, the bliss in the meditation. And then you have the sapitakang, which is usually the second jhana, and also the first jhana. You can see the various kind of jhanas here. So it's all very exciting and all very profound. You're coming now towards the very, very end of the Buddhist path. The Buddha-to-be is now getting incredibly close to awakening. After all this hard work, leaving behind, contemplating all of these upakilesas, trying to purify the mind to the maximum, now he's getting extremely close to be able to break through. This idea, upeka sagatang, the word upeka really means to look on. And for the first time in your life, you have the pure ability to just look on at what is happening here. Before this, the mind still has some kind of bias to some extent, but the fourth jhana is supposed to be anenja. It is imperturbable. It has the ability to withstand any kind of shock. Why? Because it is very, very strong at this particular point. And that is why the fourth jhana is a foundation for insight always in Buddhism, the most powerful foundation for insight. So now, insight can happen here. So what happens next? When I had developed immersion in these ways, the knowledge and vision arose in me here. My freedom is unshakable. This is my last rebirth, that now there is no more future lives. This is kind of fascinating, because what you will notice here is that there is nothing here about the usual things about remembering your past lives, understanding the laws of karma, and becoming an arahant, which is the usual vijja that comes at the very end of the path. All that is left out. It goes straight from the jhana states, straight to becoming an arahant. That's kind of fascinating here. Why does that happen? And the reason why it happens is because if you practice these jhanas in this way, they are so powerful that the vision, the insight that comes automatically from these particular states, you're so close to awakening already that you can no longer stop the mind from going there. Knowledge and vision arises. You reach the unshakable deliverance of the mind. the Buddha knows this is my last birth. I have achieved what I set out to achieving, found the end of dukkha. Now, finally, he has become the Buddha. Yeah, because now he has the insight of the Buddha at this particular point. So this is what is happening here. So if you want to practice as the Buddha and you want to follow in his footsteps, this is what you have to do. Your freedom has to become unshakable. This is your last birth. Now there is no more future lives. This is what the Buddha said. Satisfied, Venerable Anuruddha was happy with what the Buddha said. Upakilesa Suttang Nittitang Attamang. The end of the Upakilesa Sutta. So, there you are. So that is kind of a fairly amazing sutta and very, very powerful towards the end there. And perhaps you feel this is far away. Perhaps this feels very alien and very difficult to kind of make sense of, perhaps. But it's nice to know what it is like. You have to have some idea of what this path is all about. And I have personally always enjoyed reading the suttas, understanding independent origination, understanding what the awakening experience are roughly about. Because once you have that idea of the map, you have the vision of the overall path, then all the little aspects that we're trying to do, they fit into the larger picture. It becomes more interesting, more easy to practice in the right way when you have that bird's eye view of what actually is going on. So, there you are, and tomorrow we're going to carry on. We're going to look at some more suttas that are more related to insight and understanding, and we're going to look and continue in the same kind of vein. But that is the sutta for today. So let's do a tiny bit more of meditation together, and we'll come back to the Q&A again afterwards. Okay, everyone. So let us just do a few more questions, are there any questions about what we have been doing just now before I go on to the written ones about this last session? Anyone want to ask anything about that? Yeah, thank you. Oh, okay. We're gonna have to. So everyone is okay. So let's just go into these questions then, because then we can. One thing, okay, please. Yeah. What is the form? Well, the form it would usually be because the light usually has a shape to it. Yes, the light has a shape, like a sun or something like that. That's just the form of the light. Yeah, so light and form going together, like a shape. Yeah, often like just the sun or the moon or some round, usually a round shape, but it can be anything. That's usually what it means. But it can also be other things, like, you know, the lady talking about today about all the seeing all these houses. That's also a form, a shape. Yeah, but that's a bit too complex. You want to make it simple. So next time, make it simpler. Then it's going to be more, make it more powerful if it's simpler. Yeah. But still, you're doing very well. So yeah.
Ajahn, sorry.
Yeah.
What if it's just color?
Color is okay. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
No form.
No form, just color. Yeah. Well, that's what he's talking about. That you ideally you want to get a bright color together with a form. But what if you have some light already? Good. Keep on with that. If it feels good.
I mean the color is beautiful color. So that's light, right?
Good. Yeah.
But the form must be with the light.
Usually it comes with the light. Yeah.
Okay.
The light
so
itself
it can be
has a form.
Something in the light.
It can be, no, it means the light itself has a shape, like the sun, like the sun is round, right? Yeah. Like you're seeing the sun. If you see the sun in your mind, you're seeing a round, like seeing a round shape. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry? Both is usually better because if you can focus on it, you can use it as it becomes a focus point for your meditation practice, yeah? It's something you can kind of stay with quite easily, yeah? That's kind of the idea. Okay.